Hey, folks, and welcome to this week's podcast. Our guest this week is Mark Bissino, singer, songwriter, record maker from Queens, New York, one of the five boroughs of New York City. He was on the program in 2010, I think. And if you don't get enough of him, his background from this podcast, you might check out that episode of the show. It's over at WFMU.org/Michael, where the archives are. Mark is a very interesting pop music maker, songwriter, producer, musician. Just, you know, he has a lot of influences and they keep growing. We talk about that a lot on this record, how he's evolved as a songwriter and record maker. And this record particularly has some very, very interesting influences, and the way that he sort of puts them all together, I think, is unique and interesting. And I guess that's what it's all about. So it's sort of taking the pop, you know, idiom and moving it forward by trying new stuff out of old stuff. I don't know. Does that make any sense? Anyway, super nice guy. MarkBissino.com is the website. Top of the World is the new record. Here he is, me and Mark Bissino talking about all things pop. All right, there is Kaylee Hughes from the new Mark Bissino record called Top of the World. I think Mark joins us on the phone. Good morning, Mark. Are you there?
Hey, I am here. How are you, Michael Shelley?
I'm doing great. One interesting thing about that song right off the top of my head is that it is your teenage son on drums. Isn't that right?
That is correct. That is my son, Lee Bissino, on drums. Yeah, he did a great job. I'm really happy about it.
Yeah, it's amazing. What was it like working with him? I mean, tell me about just like cutting the drums on that song. Is that something that takes an hour, a day, a week?
Yeah, man, it was so much fun to do it with him. You know, it's so weird to do it with your son. Yeah, it was actually really simple. You know, I kind of showed him what I wanted ahead of time, and he just went away and woodshedded for a while. I didn't even see what he was doing, and then we booked a few hours in a studio. So it was kind of his first time that he was ever in a commercial studio, which was really fun, and just to kind of experience that through his eyes. And so I booked a few. We did in a studio in Brooklyn, and I booked a few hours because I'm like, I don't know, is he going to like, you know, he's going to need to do multiple takes, you know, and we got everything set up and we went for it. And like first take was great. He was done. The engineer looked at me and was like, I don't know. What do you want to do? And I'm like, I don't know. Let's do another take. Second take. Just as good. You know, it's like, okay, we got like 3 hours. What are we supposed to do here? So we did it like three times and, you know, there were like three takes that were really good, and then we just sat around and listened to them for another 2 hours. So we just sat around and goofed around, but yeah, he killed it, man. He just, you know, he's a far better musician than I am, that's for sure.
I guess it comes down to sort of practicing with headphones and getting it sort of rehearsing it so that he had it ready to go. So as I was prepping for our interview, I was looking at reviews of your new record, Top of the World. And AllMusic says, Mark Bissino makes the kind of smiling, ice cream colored pop you can easily imagine pumping through AM radio in the 1960s. So obviously super positive. Is that what you imagine when you're making a record like this?
I don't know, man. I don't think I imagine anything. I think that's what comes out, or that's what people perceive comes out. I'm not really necessarily thinking that, but maybe it's just so ingrained in me, in my style of writing at this point, that that's just what happens, whether I think about it consciously or not. But yeah, that was a kind review, man. That's like really, I mean, I'll take it. That's cool. But I don't know if I'm necessarily thinking about like, oh, this sounds like a track that came out of my AM radio. But, you know, to be fair, I listened to all that stuff as a kid, man. That was just, you know, how many times did I hear Brandy or A Fine Girl, you know, on a tiny little radio? So all this stuff is like just embedded in my brain. I guess that's what comes out without me even really trying.
I think your albums have a real evolution, and this record continues that cycle. So for students of Mark Bissino, over the course of four records, you know, they all sound like you, and there's definitely a thread connecting the songs and the production and your vocal style and your ear, but I definitely hear an evolution. I mean, I would assume you agree, right? You didn't just stay static.
No, I don't think so. I hear it too, man. And again, it's not anything... Similarly, it's not anything that I plan out or think about ahead of time. It's just sort of happened, I guess, because I'm not the same guy I was when I put out my first record in 98. And, you know, you grow as a person. And I guess you grow as a songwriter. And I hope I hope that's the case, you know. And some people get down on me, you know, they're like, oh, you know, we love all this stuff you're doing, but, you know, maybe you could do something like the old stuff because we really like those records. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I can, you know, because I'm a different person. It's just like, I think I could try, but it might be really bad. I don't know. It might be terrible. You know, I could try to make Pop Job 2, but I don't know like what that would be, you know?
Well, it's very interesting that I think definitely these songs reflect the concerns of somebody who's not 28 or whatever, you know, it's just natural to me. And like I said before, you know, but there is still a lot of Mark Bacino that comes through. So yeah, I agree. How can you expect to write the same kind of songs for 30 years? You know, hopefully you as a person have changed. I hope so. And I think the songs really reflect that. But let's talk about that first record from 1998, Pop Job. I always talk about that as a perfect LP. I mean, it's just a perfect, like perfect for time, place, just the way it sounds, the songs, the performances, especially in sort of a crowded field, you know, sort of power pop records, a boy singing songs with guitars and harmonies. There were lots of them. I mean, there's always lots of them, but especially around that time, I think there were a lot of them and yours really stood out. So tell me, just to flash back there, what were your expectations when that first record was coming out? What did you think would happen?
Wow, well, thank you, first of all, for the nice words about that record. It is definitely a favorite amongst people who listen to my stuff, that's for sure. And I love it. It's great. I'll totally take it. I didn't have any expectations, man, to be honest. And you were right. It was kind of a crowded field at the time. There was a lot of that bubbling, even in the big mainstream world. You know, you had sort of the Fountains of Wayne's and the Weezers doing, I guess, what you could loosely say was power pop. And I don't know. I just was doing what I was doing, you know. I maybe there was something in the air, in the water at that time, you know, in the New York scene, there was a lot of that going on. So I was hearing all these things, and I guess I was just sort of taking them in. And what I was doing was what I was doing. It was just coming out that way. I didn't really think about it at all in terms of just sort of any... There wasn't any logic to it. It was just feeling. I guess the closest I could say about it is that I was talking to a really nice A&R person at a major label. I think it was at Columbia at the time. And she had become sort of a friend and a champion of my stuff. And she was listening to some stuff that I was doing, which sort of sounded a little more 80s. It was still poppy. And then she was like, you know, you're really just a pop person. You know, you're really like a pop songwriter. She's like, you should really embrace that. So that was like the only piece of advice that I took to heart, and maybe I leaned on that a little bit when I was writing the songs. Like, how catchy can I make these songs? That was probably the only, you know, intellectualizing that I did.
That's interesting.
Just how catchy can I make these songs? And that was it.
That's very interesting. I do think what you're talking about maybe is just how people who were, just what you said, were listening to the AM radio, even on a subconscious level, as little kids, and then they all became, you know, of the age to make records, and they had all kind of had, right, you know, new wave and punk and disco and all these things. So this thing just kind of naturally happened. I definitely think that power pop has its like cycles, especially like in the press. Or if I feel like every few years people write these articles that say power pop is finally going to have its moment, or it's going to have its moment again, or it's going to be the next big thing.
Right.
Yeah, and I think the 90s were definitely part of that thing. Yeah,
that was the time for sure.
One of the things, whenever I play your records on WFMU, I always point out that you're from Queens, because to me, like, local, you know, you're local, and so many, you know, you don't get to announce too often enough anyway, hey, this guy's from Queens. I definitely think you are from Queens, you know what I mean? Like, your accent, your point of view.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Have you been in Queens your whole life?
Well, I grew up in Queens, spent a little time in Long Island, but not much, mostly in Queens. And then I lived in Manhattan for some years with my wife, and I lived in Manhattan. And then when we decided to, you know, stop spending $1 billion and we wanted to have a kid, the party time was over, we ended up buying a house in Queens. It was, again, not premeditated. It just ended up happening that way. Like, we were looking for a particular type of house and we found it and it was in Queens, so we ended up back here. So yeah, man, I'm kind of a local, and I think that definitely affects. I had this conversation with, I did a video podcast and with another New Yorker, and he said, man, that Kaylee Hughes song, like, is very because I said it's about, you know, it's really about people that we meet in life who are super nice, but you don't believe them. You just think they're full of crap or something. And then you feel like bad for being cynical. He goes, that's such a New York thing. Mm-hmm. He's like, there's such a New York like perspective. And I'm like, oh, I guess so. I guess it is, you know. So it permeates the work, you know.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You do host, you still host your podcasts, and one of them is, or both of them really are about Queens.
Yeah, that's right. My sort of day gig, I produce for Queens Public Television, and part of that responsibility is I look over their podcasts, and I produce and host two of the podcasts myself. One is called Queens Creative, and then the other one is called Queens County USA. And Queens Creative is just me talking to cool artistic people from Queens, you know? And, you know, that's just going through, you know, their artistic processes and things like that. And then the other podcast, Queens County USA, that's more like historical. Like, I try to find like little, like weird little stories that are related to, you know, the borough, and then I try to relate them in like a kind of, you know, hopefully semi-interesting way.
You know? I know that one of your guests was Greg Calbee, the world-famous mastering engineer who is from Queens, whose father,
right.
You know, he grew up, his father had a bread route delivering bread around Queens. He was a guest on the program. You guys talked about Queens and stuff. It was super interesting. I mean, we've talked about this before. Not everybody, even I don't really understand it fully. What does mastering add to the final touch to an album?
Oh, mastering, yeah. I think mastering is a bit of a mystery to a lot of people, what that exactly is. And I think even to some musicians, it's a bit of a mystery, you know. But, I mean, basically, mastering is sort of the final step in the production process. You know, after you record your songs and you mix them, then you bring, you know, your record to mastering. And what it does basically is they take your songs, if you're making a record, an album, let's say, then they'll sequence your songs. And more importantly, they'll try to tweak them a little bit through various studio trickery to try to just make them sound a little better than they were when you handed them over. So in Greg's case, you know, he's a wizard, he's a master, he's been doing it for, you know, 50 years. You know, he'll just take the tracks and he mastered my new record, Top of the World. He'll take the tracks, the mixes, and he'll say, oh, I think, you know, in simplest terms, oh, maybe I think you could have a little more bass on this track. You could have a little more, this other track could be a little brighter, you know. And so he'll do that, and he'll try to make each track just a little bit better, and then sequence them, and then also try to make them live together, which is really interesting, like how they all sound like they were all recorded on the same day. You know, it's very, very, very tough job and a very misunderstood job. But there are people like Greg who are really great at it. And, you know, it's really worth having them take the extra step and the extra mile, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this record was recorded with, you know, different co-producers and different studios and stuff. So yeah, it's great to have somebody help you make it gel like into one package. So talk about songwriting, hard or easy?
For me, easy, because I'm not a very easygoing person, but oddly I am when it comes to, yeah, I'm easygoing when it comes to songwriting. Like, I just don't sweat it. You know, like, I just write when I feel like writing, and if I don't feel like writing, I don't write. And if I'm particularly stuck on a song or a piece of music that's going to be turned into a song, I don't sweat it, man. I just walk away, and I say, well, you know, When it comes, and then I'll end up just revisiting it casually. And so that means that, you know, some songs could be done in a half hour, or some songs could be sitting around germinating for like 2 years. I'll just, you know, record a voice memo on my phone. And I find that the songs that I finish are generally the songs that I remember, even without listening to a voice memo or something like that. Like, I just go, okay, I remembered that, so that's catchy. And, you know, and then I'll just mull it. I'll mull things over in my mind. You know, like, I find like these days I don't even almost, I might start writing a song on a piano or guitar, but then I almost don't even need the instrument. Like, I'll be doing the dishes or something, and then I'll be writing the melody in my head for the particular track, you know, and I find that freeing, actually, because then you're not tied to the restrictions of what you can do on an instrument. You know, like, I'm just like an okay guitar player and a less okay piano player. And, you know, so if you use your head and you're just singing, that to me is like the most versatile, flexible instrument, you know? So I do it like that.
Your songs are so melodic, that makes perfect sense. So the song Not That Guy, I want to hear that one right now. Mark Bassino, brand new album is called Top of the World. You can go to parasolrecords.com or markbassino.com or markbassino.bandcamp.com to pick up the new record or your entire back catalog. Do you run the songs by your wife when you, you know, she like your quality control, or do you know... Because a song like this one seems to me that it would be particular interest to a wife.
Yeah, I kind of play them for her, not really at the initial stages. I'll definitely play it for her like when it's totally done, you know. And then she'll say, oh, that's cool. Or she'll be like, oh, I don't know that, you know. She might roll her eyes at some. But yeah, there's a lot of like interesting topics on this record. Very untraditional songs. A friend of mine, David Poe, who's a great singer-songwriter, he told me, he goes, these are songs about things. This is song, you know, it's not like, they're not, he's like, I really like that. Like, it's not about, you know, I love you, you love me. Although there's some of that there for sure. But it's really, you know, a song like I Like Wearing Clothes is, you know, it's kind of an oddball thing. But yeah, I do run it by the wife afterwards to get the seal of approval.
All right. Mark Bassino, thanks for visiting with us. Let's hear Not That Guy, and good luck with Top of the World.
Thank you so much, man. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Thanks.
Side. Oh.